So Shadi and I are going to speak about a few projects that Judith initiated at the gallery and sort of where they've taken us. Shadi and I have been working together for 3 years on a variety of projects. Together we're going to present our experiences from our individual perspectives within this. Shadia was a member of the first AGO Teen Council, and she's going to tell you a little bit about that experience. But we wanted to start with a quote by Martha Kumsa. This quote comes out of a book called Making Meaning, and this was a project that Judith initiated with PEN Canada, which is an organization that works with writers in political exile. Six writers were invited to have family memberships at the gallery, interrogate collections and spaces, and create pieces of writing based on those interrogations and those experiences that they had had at the AGO. So Shadi is going to start with a quote from this.
The piece is called The Space in Between by Martha Kumsa. This rigid curve between you and me is just a contingent turn of a spiral, just a spot in the expanse of continuity, but lo and behold, it wears an elusive face of a border. It takes the name of divide and conquer. Am I the object and you the image? Am I the real and you the fake? Am I the original creature and you the copy? This border slaps me in the face with shame. My hope melts into despair. The hate of you consumes me, and my head turns away with a jolt.
Judith and I once spoke of lines of desire, a term used by city planners to refer to those pathways that deter from the zone plan for a particular space. Worn down bits of the corners of sidewalks, traffic routes that defy those created in the mapping of city streets. The projects that Judith initiated invited people to form lines of desire in the museum in an attempt to reroute the relationship between insiders and outsiders. Insiders played outsiders, outsiders played insiders, to the point where the line between the two, she hoped, began to disappear. Their lines of desire opened up a much larger text of social interaction in which the museum is read from a variety of perspectives and exists in a much larger sphere.
In 1999, I joined Teens Behind the Scenes at the AGO, a program originally inspired by Judith. Coming from the outside cultural community and being involved to the inside of the AGO for me was a series of firsts. As a newcomer to Canada, Toronto downtown wasn't my place. I never even thought that a big institution like the AGO even existed. I definitely didn't think that it would allow me to enter and participate in creating a welcoming space for youth and to challenge the perception and reality that the AGO was a place for rich people, not the people in the community.
Much of the strategizing around audience happens behind closed doors in the museum. In an effort to hear a wider selection of voices and to better respond to the slippery and elusive audience, in recent years there have been more and more opportunities for audience participation and feedback in museums. Focus groups, evaluation forums, public soundings have been set up to hear audiences and to create a sense of efficacy amongst museum constituents. Here, insides and outsides are constituted by the relationship established between the questioned and the questioner. The problem with merely asking questions, Irit Rogoff points out, is that the question, whatever the question might be, is inevitably articulated at the centers of power.
I, like the majority of our group, came from communities that weren't attached to the institution. We were invited to say that the AGO is for everyone. We were given the chance to create a new community of our communities and to collaborate in showcasing what art looks like in the eyes of our generation.
At museum meetings and ever more frequently conferences, it is common to hear museum administrators discussing the audience. They talk about attracting the audience, captivating the audience, engaging the audience, holding the audience. They talk about maneuvering the audience, targeting the audience, educating the audience, helping the audience. The audience consists of demographic categories, each carrying with it simplifications, assumptions, stereotypes. Each time audience is uttered with a rhetorical tone of certainty, heads nod, ah yes, the audience. Conceived of and spoken in such ways, the audience is positioned as the museum's other. It is relegated to a geographical and conceptual outside.
I was situated as an insider as soon as I was chosen to participate in the scene council. It was all about us and our ideas. We communicated with the AGO staff and were shown how things were done in the institution. We created events like Shocking Vibes and New Beginning, our statement of change at the AGO, that included work by 200 young artists in a variety of media. Shocking Vibes happened over 6 months. We invited youth to exhibit whatever they wanted. We showcased fashion designers, music performers, visual artists. We wanted to remove boundaries between art forms. We were interested in youth and their expressions through art. It occurred during the time of the Columbine shooting, and there was tremendous fear about youth events in the city during that time.
The Teen Council reserves the right to look away from objects, to use the museum as their inspiration, or to turn their gaze onto something else entirely. They constitute their programs through relationships with people, objects, and ideas. Their projects are entirely subjective. Their exhibitions portray moments of emerging culture, happenings, and are taken down immediately. The museum to them is situated in a vast text that includes circuits of communication, social groups, schools, parents, stores, etc.
Well, next, we created a ballet on skateboards. We invited youth from both the suburbs and the inner city to work with composer Terence Dick and dance choreographer Zoya Smutny. They worked for weeks to develop an improvised ballet on wheels. This was performed at the two one-day events advertised as Deck, an exhibition of skate culture, held at a mall in the suburbs and at the AGO. Each skater was endorsed by a local skate shop, and old school skaters came to talk about the early days of freestyle skateboarding.
Teen Council members sought to challenge institutions. They selected two spaces that skaters used, two places that they consistently made their mark, two spaces from which they were often banned in which to showcase skateboarding as an art form. Inscriptions by skaters were like marks on paper to them, traces of youth in the city. They wanted to challenge the commodification of what skateboarding had become. There were no ramps, no boarding competitions, no multinational sponsors.
Well, our largest event was an exhibition of hip-hop culture in the making. We wanted to change stereotypes about hip-hop culture. We worked with many other youth organizations with the same goals. We wanted to take it back and showcase what was happening in the scene and show youth that spoken word could be used as a powerful tool. We invited leaders from the grassroots hip-hop community to give workshops on how to build communities, how to think critically about representations of women and violence in hip-hop. We have now done this 2 years in a row, and over 1,500 people came this year.
HYPE invited youth organizations from across the city to become involved. Graffiti collectives whose 15 and 16-year-old members were being arrested for drawing on walls in their schools were invited to occupy spaces on the gallery's lower level. MC crews demonized on city corners as gangs were invited to meet at the gallery for weeks prior to their performance. What appeared as a one-day event was 6 months of negotiating. Would security staff allow bandanas, indicators to them of gang activity? Could we use the walls for graffiti artists? Would union staff stay late? Who were the partners? Where were the partners? The amorphous nature of hip-hop culture met with its very opposite in the museum.
We did encounter limits in our project. Small budgets, the preconceptions of security staff, disagreements about event capacity. Some of us also worried about whether the art we showed was appropriate in the eyes of the institution. Some of us didn't care. We learned quickly to work against and around these limits.
The limit between insider and outsider embeds itself in the smallest and most banal of interactions in the museum. The production of a brochure, a condensed timeline, a shaved budget, a missed meeting, an unreturned phone call. Limits impose themselves when these lines of desire interact with broader conceptions about audience. Attendance can't be projected. Demographics shift with every event. Notions of quality are disrupted. Authority is usurped. Museum spaces are oriented to operate differently. The question remains, how then does the museum hear the many and multiple voices of the people that make up its audience? How does the museum hear these voices without reinforcing the very mechanics of its historical silence?
Since my time on the council, I have mentored other youth at the gallery. Last year, I was invited to be one of 15 to respond to the museum in a project associated with the exhibition House Guests, Contemporary Artists at the Grange. The Grange is a 19th century house that was donated to the City of Toronto, which later became the Art Gallery of Ontario. House Guest was a series of interventions by 7 artists into the historical home. I worked with the artist Louis Jacob to create a 30-second audio project. This audio intervention was placed along with the others in a kiosk in the basement of the house. I found this statement written very small in the Grange Library beside the fireplace. It quoted, "Great is the power of truth that can easily defend itself by its own force." Was the statement in the library to start a debate, or was it a philosophical quotation? The Grange House was built in the 1800s. Marcus Cicero, who made the statement, was born in Rome in 106 BC. When I first read the quotation, I didn't know what it meant. I started asking people what they thought it meant. I was puzzled, as were they. I want people to think about it and find their own interpretation. This audio piece is my own way of interpreting it. Great is the power of truth that can easily defend itself by its own force. Force, own, its, by, itself, defend, easily, can, that, truth, of, power, the, is, great. Great is the power of truth that can easily defend itself by its own force. I read each word backwards. It's not often that you hear people speaking backwards, so you have to figure out what the person is trying to say. It's like hearing a new language from the perspective of a different culture. You have to question what you hear. Reading it backwards makes it questionable. Even though this is a definitive statement, it fills us with questions. Whose truth is powerful in the Grange or in the library? Who does this truth belong to? Who wrote it? Who believes in it? Then I read the quote forwards to indicate my point of realization. I had achieved an understanding of what the words mean when they are put together. Coming from outside of a language or culture, this is how you make sense of words, sentences and ideas. You make your own interpretation. The museum is a language that is foreign to many of us all.
Inviting conversations, readings of the museum set out on collaboratively negotiated terms, we reframe the question of participation. Through a real partnership with the public, questioning, repositioning, and rerouting the museum can be a shared interaction. But special projects like these often find themselves at the margins of the museum. Their budgets are smaller, they last for short periods of time, and they are encouraged to stay out of the way of the day-to-day operations of the gallery, the machines of audience generation. Rather than the belief of a department or individual, this reorientation of participation must be held by the institution as a whole. The question posed by institutions not answer this, but as Judith used to say, "So, what do you want to do?" And her answer, "Let's do it."
Now, I have a question of the audience. I want to know, according to my watch, it's 10 to 5. I would like to have permission from you to go to 6:30, which will take, it will give each of the speakers the full amount of time. If some of you have to leave, we'll understand. But can I just see a show of hands of how many people could stay till 6:30 or would be prepared to stay till 6:30? Okay, we're not going to have any questions now, then we're going to just keep going. I apologize, but I think it's better to do it this way and leave the questions for those who are brave and stay till the end. It'll give us a little more time.